Okay, let's just jump right in. We live in a world that is, I mean, fundamentally defined by the binary bit.
Completely. Everything we touch, right? The massive data centers, the phone in your pocket, it's all built on this one simple choice.
On or off, one or zero.
And for decades, all the progress we've made has been about just cramming more of those two states into smaller and smaller spaces.
But we're hitting a wall, a physical wall. You hear it all the time now. Moore's Law is slowing down.
And that reality is forcing us to ask a really interesting question. What if the next big leap isn't about making the transistor smaller, but about making the digit itself, smarter?
And that is exactly the premise we're diving into today, ternary computing.
We've gone through a whole stack of technical analysis looking at base three logic versus our conventional base two.
So our mission here is to take you beyond that binary constraint. We really want to understand if this system, ternary computing, is just some mathematical curiosity for a textbook.
Or if it could be the genuine future of efficient computing, especially with the explosive demand from AI.
To even start, we have to get the vocabulary right. In binary, we all know the fundamental unit is the bit.
Right. And in ternary, the unit is the trit, short for ternary digit.
And a trit can represent three distinct states, not just two.
Which sounds like a small change, but that one extra state has huge implications.
Okay, so break down that information density gain for us, because the number I saw was pretty staggering.
It is. Because a trit can encode one of three possibilities, it just carries significantly more information than a bit. The math works out that every single trit packs about 1.585 bits of information.
So per digit, what does that translate to?
It's a 58% improvement in information density per digit.
Wait, hold on. 58%, that's not a small step.
No.
That's a paradigm shift in how much data you can encode on the exact same number of physical components.
It absolutely is. And that 58% figure, that's the theoretical core that has driven, decades of research into this stuff. If you can encode more with less,
You reduce complexity, you reduce chip area, power consumption, heat.
everything. And this isn't just like a lucky accident of numbers. It's rooted in some pretty fundamental math, something called radix economy.
Radix economy. Okay, that sounds dense. What is that?
It's basically a cost function. When you build a number system, you're looking for that sweet spot, between the complexity of your base, the radix R, and the number of digits, D, you need to represent a number.
So the cost is the base times the number of digits.
Graphically, yeah. The cost is R time D. And the technical sources point out that if you weren't limited to whole numbers,
If you could build a computer out of anything.
the mathematically perfect base, the one that minimizes that cost function, is Euler's number E.
Which is about 2.718.
Exactly. But, we can't really manufacture a chip that runs on base 2.718.
So you look for the closest integer.
And the closest integer is 3. So mathematically, base 3 is just the most efficient integer radix you can use.
Okay, let's make that concrete. Those sources gave an example. Let's say you want to represent the number 100,000. How do they stack up?
Well, in binary, you'd need 17 digits. So the cost is 2 times 17, which is 34.
Okay. And ternary.
Ternary only needs 11 digits to represent that same number. So its cost is 3 times 11, which is 33. It's a small difference there, but it's a measurable gain.
But the implication for memory is where it really hits home.
Yeah.
The source says if you, the listener, need to store, say, 729 unique states, binary needs 10 bits.
And ternary.
How many treats?
Only 6. Just 6 trait.
That's a 40% reduction in the number of storage elements you need.
A 40% reduction. Now think about that on a modern chip with billions of transistors. You're saving a monumental amount of space and cost.
Now, before we get into the history, the sources make a big distinction between two types of ternary, because one is, well, way more elegant than the other.
That's right. First, you have unbalanced ternary. It uses the digits you'd expect, 0, 1, and 2.
That's simple enough.
It is, but it still needs complex processes to handle negative numbers, sort of like binary does.
And then you have the one that gets computer architects really excited, balanced ternary.
Yes. Balanced ternary uses the values minus 1, 0, and plus 1. And this setup, it gives you this beautiful symmetric representation around 0.
Which is perfect for doing math.
It makes things like multiplication and especially negation just vastly simpler than in binary.
Speaking of elegance, let's jump from the math to the history, because this idea isn't new at all. It actually predates electronics completely.
Oh, yeah. Way back. We're talking 1840. An English inventor named Thomas Fowler built a mechanical calculating machine made of wood. and it used balanced ternary arithmetic.
A wooden computer.
Basically, yeah, to calculate taxes and interest. So the core advantage was understood a very long time ago.
But the real milestone, the one the source material focuses on, is Seton.
Seton, the first modern electronic ternary computer, developed in 1958 at Moscow State University by a team led by Nikolai Brusensov.
And they were bold. They built it using that elegant balanced ternary logic.
And Seton just proved the theory worked in the real world. I mean, the advantages were stunning. Its design led to a 50% reduction in component count compared to the binary machines of the era.
50%.
50% fewer components. And as a result, it used way less power. It was this monument to efficiency.
The biggest revelation for them was how much it simplified arithmetic, which comes back to that magic 1 0 plus 1 system.
Yeah.
We need to pause on this because this is the real aha moment.
Okay, think about how binary subtracts a number. It's not direct. It has to find the negative equivalent using a process called 2's complement.
Which is a multi-step thing, right?
It is. First, you have to invert all the bits. Ones become zeros, zeros become ones, and then you have to add one to that result. It requires special circuits, multiple clock cycles.
It's messy. It's resource intensive.
Now, compare that to balanced ternary. Negation is trivial. It's instant. It's one operation.
What is it?
You just flip the signs. A plus one becomes a minus one. A minus one becomes plus one. Zero stays zero. Done.
So to multiply a number like plus 7 by negate 1, you literally just flip the signs in its ternary representation, and you instantly have negative 7.
Instantly. You completely eliminate all those complex steps that 2's complement needs.
Okay, so this is the part that's always confused me. If ternary was mathematically optimal, if it cut the component count in half, and it made the math so much easier...
Why are we not using it?
Yes. Why did binary win? Why did it totally dominate the 1970s and beyond?
The answer has nothing to do with math and everything to do with physical engineering and commercial scale. It comes down to two things: state detection complexity and noise margins.
Let's break that down, because this is the barrier that basically stopped ternary in its tracks for 50 years.
Okay, think of a simple 5-volt electrical system. In binary, you have two states, right? Low voltage for zero, high voltage for one.
To tell them apart, you just need one threshold.
One threshold. Let's put it right in the middle, say at 2.5 volts. Anything below that is a zero, anything above is a one.
And that leaves this huge buffer zone on either side, the noise margin.
Exactly. The signal can fluctuate because of heat or interference, and the computer still reads it correctly. It's incredibly robust. It's tough.
Now do the same for ternary.
Okay, now you're trying to squeeze three states. Let's say 0V for minus one, 2.5V for zero, and 5E for plus 1 into that same 5-volt range.
To separate three states, you suddenly need two thresholds.
Two thresholds, and look what happens to your error buffer.
The margins get razor thin.
They get tiny. Those tighter noise margins mean the whole system is suddenly super sensitive to electronic noise, to interference from nearby wires, and especially to the tiny variations that happen during mass manufacturing.
So if one transistor is just a little bit off, your state could flip from a plus one to a zero by accident.
Precisely. At the end of the day, binary was just simpler, tougher, and cheaper to manufacture reliably. And that physical reality just crushed ternary's mathematical elegance for decades.
That makes so much sense. The engineering constraints just beat the math. But now, now we're in the 21st century, and we have these two huge drivers forcing a second look.
The slowdown of Moore's Law and the absolutely insane power-hungry demand of modern AI.
And the material science is finally catching up to the math from the 50s.
We're finally starting to overcome that historical noise margin barrier, but with completely new types of hardware.
The analysis highlights two big ones. The first is carbon nanotube field effect transistors, or CNTFTs.
CNTFTs are a huge deal here because, unlike silicon, you can engineer them at the nanoscale to have really precise threshold voltages. You can build in the stability you need for three states.
Which means you can finally build reliable ternary gates.
And you can do it with a transistor count that's actually competitive with binary. The source mentions a CNTFT ternary inverter that only uses 4 transistors. That kind of control was science fiction in the 70s.
And the second piece of hardware, which seems almost tailor-made for this, is the memristor.
Memristors are perfect for this. They're resistive memory devices. They naturally store information using different levels of electrical resistance.
So instead of just high or low resistance for a bit,
you can program a memristor to have 3 distinct stable resistance levels, say 1K, 10K, and 100K. And each level directly stores one trick. It's incredibly dense.
So the new materials are solving the reliability problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the real pull, the commercial interest, is coming from that one killer app.
Yeah.
AI acceleration.
This is where it all comes together. We need to talk about ternary weight networks, or TWNs.
TWNs. Okay, what are they?
In a neural network, you have all these weights. They're just numbers that define how the AI makes decisions. In a TWN, you constrain all of those weights to only be one of three values.
Let me guess. One at 1, 0, or plus one?
Exactly. The balanced ternary value.
And how does that simple constraint translate into real-world benefits?
It leads to insane levels of compression. You can get up to an 8x reduction in model size. Memory requirements can drop by as much as 16 times compared to a standard 32-bit network.
16 times. So if you're putting AI on a tiny battery-powered sensor that's not a nice-to-have, that's
yeah.
Mandatory?
It's the only way it's possible, but the power saving is even more incredible, and it all hinges on that middle state, the zero.
Through a concept called zero skipping.
Zero skipping. It's so simple and so brilliant. When the system processes data, it looks at the weight. If the weight is zero,
it just does nothing.
It skips the calculation entirely. Zero power used, zero time wasted for that operation.
And if the weight is plus one or negle one one?
Then the math becomes trivial. If the weight is plus one, the output is just the input, x. If it's negos one, the output is just the negative of the input, neg x.
So wait, you're telling me the system eliminates the need for floating point multipliers?
It completely eliminates them. And multipliers are gigantic energy hogs on a chip. They take up a huge amount of area.
So we're replacing these incredibly complex, power-hungry multiplication operations with, what, simple data routing and maybe flipping a sign?
That's it. That's the whole trick. And the sources project a 30-40% energy reduction just from doing that.
Think what that means for an IoT sensor. You could push the battery life of a coin cell from 2 years to 3 years. That changes the entire economic model of deploying these things.
It does. That specialized niche AI inference, battery-powered edge devices, that's where ternary is poised to win today.
But despite all these breakthroughs, binary isn't going away for our laptops and desktops, is it? What's the biggest hurdle for general computing?
The barrier isn't physics anymore. It's the ecosystem and standardization.
Right. Decades of inertia.
Decades of deeply optimized compilers, software libraries, design tools. The whole world is built on a binary foundation.
And ternary has none of that.
None of it. There's no standard ISA, no instruction set architecture. That's the rule book that lets software talk to hardware. You'd need to extend programming languages with new data types like TRIT and TRITE.
So the cost to switch everything over for general computing is just, it's astronomical.
It's prohibitive. And even with CNTV 8's helping, there's still a small overhead. In some cases, a ternary gate might still be, say, 1.2 to 1.5 times larger than its binary equivalent.
A trade-off that makes sense for a low-power AI chip, but not for a high-speed gaming PC.
Exactly. So the conclusion is pretty clear for now.
Binary remains the king of general computing because of that massive ecosystem.
But ternary is absolutely the winner for those specialized jobs. AI inference, IoT sensors, anywhere power and size are the most critical problems to solve.
And the research roadmap suggests this isn't the end of the story. People are actively trying to build out that ecosystem for the future.
They are. You have IE working groups trying to hammer out standard ternary ISAs, and the long-term vision gets really futuristic.
Like Quartrets in quantum computing.
The ternary version of a qubit. They might offer some big theoretical advantages for certain quantum algorithms, maybe an error correction.
And then there's the idea of optical ternary networks.
Using three states of light polarization or phase instead of two, you could potentially bypass a lot of the electrical speed limits and get to, well, networking speeds we can only dream about right now.
It's just fascinating that the mathematical elegance that someone like Donald Knuth has championed for years, saying balanced ternary is just inherently superior, is finally getting the hardware it needs to be practical.
It's moving from being this historical curiosity to, you know, a very specific, very powerful tool right when we need it most, as binary's limits are becoming so clear.
So if we recap this whole deep dive, the message seems pretty clear.
Ternary has this superior mathematical efficiency, that 58% higher density, the super simple arithmetic. It failed historically because of a physical problem, those tight noise margins.
But now new materials like CNTFETs and the crazy energy demands of AI are forcing us to give it a serious second look.
Exactly.
Okay, let's leave it with one final thought.
Yeah.
And it circles all the way back to the elegance of that balanced ternary system, the one that uses minus one, zero, and plus one.
The sources suggest that the middle state, the zero, has this other subtle but really profound application beyond just math.
In system design, that zero state can be used to represent something else.
It can represent unknown or undefined.
which means if a component fails or gets hit with noise, and its output defaults to that middle zero state.
The system can instantly read that as an error, a built-in error flag.
So what if the future of robust, low-power computing isn't just about processing faster, but about building error detection directly into the fabric of the digit itself, using that zero state as a natural hardware-level warning sign?
Now that is a truly elegant solution to one of the oldest problems in computing.